Well, it's been about a year now since Steve Sippel gave up the day-to-day newspaper journalism work for Husker Online and part of the On3 sports group. And what's it been like? Is it everything you expected it to be in the last, 11, 12 months?
Yeah, I get asked that a lot, John. It's not much different than what I was doing. You know, two or three columns a week. It's a little different in that we really emphasize with Sean Callahan our YouTube productions, our video productions, and I put a lot of energy into those. Probably a little more energy into those than I did at the Journal Star. But you know, Sean Callahan doesn't really ask me to do anything much different than what I was doing. So the transition hasn't been difficult.
So do you think maybe the newspapers should do a little better job of, at least what we used to call newspapers, do a little better job of the video production and maybe even the audio production and spend some more time and resources on that?
Well, here's the thing, John. I've never involved myself, you know, 33 years with the Journal Star, now, like you said, a year with Husker Online and the On3 network. I've never involved myself too much with the business side. So I'm not the one to counsel newspapers on their business model. I know that it works well for us, but it takes a lot. I mean, Sean Callahan, John, is he's very savvy in that world, our video production's really good. It's just Sean. I mean, I shouldn't say that, because we have an On3 person who's our actual producer, and it's run very well. The people there are extraordinary. Yeah, I think it could help the newspapers, but they're in a difficult spot because it's not really what a lot of the people in that industry kind of grew up on. You know, and they don't, the production is tricky. Like it's not just me and you jumping on a Zoom.
It's craft. It's technology. It's something that newspapers probably should have learned 30 years ago, and they realized 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when television started taking over the world, they might still be alive and surviving and thriving in every corner of America if they had figured out that the delivery of their product was going to change so dramatically. One man's opinion.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And that's hindsight. We have the benefit of hindsight. I do think...
I don't know. Is it really? I'm sorry to cut you off. Is it really hindsight? You don't think the newspaper business didn't figure out 50 years ago that we're making a fortune on our classified ads, and then eBay comes along and proves that you don't need a newspaper to rent your place on that Saturday morning newspaper? And that was a long time ago.
It was quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
And again, the business part of it, John, I'm not a business person, and I never fancied myself that way when I was working at the Journal Star. I would put all of my energy into a lot for years just writing, and then it became a little bit more than that, but I didn't think of those things that much. I just thought, oh, it'll take care of itself. Well, it didn't. I would say that I always had this feeling that when we had 30% profit margins at the Journal Star, it's probably the early 90s, I thought we better not just relax here. But I think we did. I think the industry did relax. Yeah. Because we were it was incredible money.
Nuts. Yeah.
30% profit margins. Come on.
Oil companies don't make that, right?
No, nobody
makes that. Well, drug dealers, but that's a different story. Yeah.
I think that some people thought it would last forever.
Yeah.
Again, but it wasn't like I was, I don't want to portray this as I was in meetings at Lee Enterprises raising my hand and said, you know, we got to figure some things out. So I don't want to be the second guesser. I just always concentrated on my craft and left the business part to others.
Yeah. Well, and others should have, and I'll stipulate that others should have been taking care of the business a little bit better than that. So let me ask you about this then. You mentioned Lee Enterprises. You worked for the Lincoln Journal Star for 33 years. Now the Omaha World Herald and the Lincoln Journal Star are part of the same company, Lee Enterprises. You know, I still buy both newspapers, and I don't know why, because half the stuff in one is in the other, and I don't know why I'm spending so much money. But that's a consumer's question, not an interviewer's question. But how do you see this? I mean, don't you see the Journal Star and the World Herald being all one newspaper if they aren't pretty darn close to it now?
Yes and no, John. I think there's still news that is unique to Omaha and news that's unique to Lincoln. And I will say this, I still read the Journal Star. And I'm pretty impressed, especially with the news coverage. The sports coverage is folded into one, basically. But I think there are still elements of news coverage that are unique to each. And I hope that they, I mean, I'm in that crowd that hopes that they stay separate, you know, that because I think the cities are they're uniquely different. And the news is uniquely different. So I don't know what the plan is. I don't pretend to know. I think it got a little on the, I can speak to the sports element better, but I'll tell you what, when I was there with Parker Gabriel and Clark Grell, now those guys have moved on. We still considered ourselves separate. I mean, we competed with the World Herald. It was, I think it was after we left, after Parker Gabriel went to Denver and Clark Grell took a job at Omaha, and I moved on. I felt like that there was a little more energy toward folding it into one and sort of less competition in the Husker realm. That's my perception. I don't talk to them about it. I don't think it's my place to talk to the participants over there about their business. That's not my, I don't think they should talk to me about my business.
Yeah. So the
that's craft, my perception.
Yeah. So the craft part of it then isn't one of the greatest gifts you had for most of the time you were at the Journal Star is that the other guys were over there as your competition, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's 100%. What should drive quality, right?
Yeah. Oh, John. I mean, for many years, yeah. And it really stayed that way. And we were very hotly competitive at the Journal Star, and it worked. It worked for, you know, many years, actually, before Parker. Brian Christopherson, I worked with him. We were hotly competitive and did a good job against them. And before that, going back to Ken Hamilton and Kurt McKeever, yeah, it was... And I think that's what I think that competition is essential. And let's face it, we're losing that all over the country. Mm-hmm. And it's not good for our business at all.
So there was a time not that long ago, Sip, when we would say sports journalism is newspapers, magazines, some radio, some television, right?
Yeah.
How would you in 2023 describe for someone what sports journalism is?
I mean, it's really multifaceted, and I would tell, you know, I'm sure you tell your students, you've got to be ready to do about everything. It's just multifaceted and kind of confusing, I think, in some ways. You can't just, it's hard just to go into it now. The mindset for me is so much different than it was in 1995, which I just wanted to be a writer. I mean, I just wanted to, at that point, I wanted to report, you know, I was a beat reporter. I did some radio interviews, but radio, those interviews weren't as pervasive as they are now. Now there's, I don't know, John, I don't know how many I do a week in addition to a radio show. That wasn't really a factor. Then even I moved to become a columnist in 2007. And really all I wanted, John, was to write columns. The other stuff would just kind of come, you kind of had to do it. You know, you'd have a meeting with the brass and they'd say, okay, good job on the columns, but now we're going to try to start doing some video work. And we want to emphasize that part. So, okay. Yeah, we can do that. And it gained some steam, but with me, it was always, I just really want to write, you know? And now I still do. I still put most of my energy into that, John. I do. But we do videos. I mean, we do hour long discussions, and you have to be prepared for that too. I mean, that's the one thing that I hope, like, your students understand. If you just jump on a video and you have a discussion with Sean Callahan or whoever, and you're not prepared, the listeners will know it.
Yeah.
They'll know. And shooting the breeze is okay, but I don't know.
So you think the audience is discerning? That they're sophisticated in many respects. Absolutely.
Especially, John, you've been here long enough to know Husker football fans are really discerning.
Yeah.
And in often cases, I always is intimidating for me because I feel like some of them know more than I do. You know, so that's
be careful. Be careful. Yeah. You don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah. I get into a situation at a wedding where I get cornered and I find that the question or some sort of social event, and the people asking me questions know so much. It's incredible to me. So this is a tough market. You got to know what you're talking about, and they'll pick you out quick if you don't know.
So a couple of things. I want to ask you about sports talk radio in a minute. But the timely part of this is that the New York Times, which a couple of years ago bought The Athletic for $550 million and have just now folded, basically disbanded their sports department at the New York Times. And all of their sports coverage will be done by The Athletic. They didn't fire anybody yet, didn't lay anybody off yet, but they basically have signaled to the rest of the world, I think, that it's okay for you not to have a daily sports section. The LA Times has decided that game stories, box scores, those kinds of things don't necessarily need to be in their newspaper. What does that say? And is that good news or bad news?
Oh, I don't know exactly what it says. I mean, with the newspapers, John, it becomes a pragmatic discussion where because of their printing operations, they just can't get some of the scores in that they need. I mean, it's different now that I always thought technology would be such that it would push our deadlines way back. And at the Journal Star, it had the opposite effect. Our deadlines, as my career went on, got earlier and earlier, which I always thought was odd. When I started, and this might answer the question a little bit, when I started at the newspaper, the Journal Star, and say, I don't know, 1889, you would have until midnight. You know, that was kind of the drop dead deadline, as I recall. Then it got to be in the late stages of my career. Okay, Sip, you got to go cover this Nebraska basketball game. You got to write a column, but we need it by 9:55.
Yeah, about 20 minutes after the game ends.
Right.
Yeah.
So and I never said much about it, but I was like, man, it's weird because it used to be midnight before technology supposedly got better. So what's happening at places like the LA Times, I'm sure, is they print so early, they have to cut it off so quickly that it just can't. It's not feasible to get the box scores in there.
The sports deadline, from what I've read, for the LA Times now is 3 p.m.
See, now what do you do?
That's not, you know, we don't play the games at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Right. Now, John, that's where you're getting into the business side.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Why they have to print that early. I'm sure it's it's purely financial.
Yeah, the LA Times sold their press. That's part of it.
See, there you
go. So they don't print their own newspaper any longer. And, you know, there was a time a couple of generations ago, certainly when I was in college, I'm older than you are, when I was in college, New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, Chicago Tribune, I mean, Louisville Courier. These are the greatest names, companies owned by families. that did generations of newspapering. Now, of course, we just mentioned in this conversation that things have changed, and that's one of the things that has changed, and that's it. And, you know, the business.
Well, one of the things too, John, is the world just changed in that you can, I mean, you do this, I'm sure. After a Nebraska football game, I can get the box score on ESPN quickly. I mean, within an hour.
I'm watching it during the game. I mean, I know what's happening during the game.
Yeah. So, yeah, the need for a newspaper to print a box score of the Dodgers Giants game is just not necessary.
No, not at all. Not at all. Steve Sipple is a columnist, I guess I can call you that, for Husker Online, part of the On3 network, after spending 33 years at the Lincoln Journal Star. You also do a radio show in the morning, a couple of hours on 93.7 The Ticket. Where does sports talk radio fit into the conversation of sports journalism, if I can ask you that?
Oh, I mean, it's conversation. And I mean, to me, I don't know how everybody else looks at it. When I turn on a radio show, a sports radio show, I want information. I want to learn. I mean, I don't know that our show does that all the time. Ours has sort of become more entertainment, I guess. But in my perfect world, when I turn on a sports radio show, I want to learn stuff. I mean, it might be, you know, a preview of the Big 12, and I want to learn about Texas. Why is everybody picking Texas? How's Brent Venables going to do at Oklahoma after last year's disaster? I want to learn whatever the subject is. But it's also entertainment. And you do also want to be entertained. You just don't want somebody reading from a manual. That's how I look at it. And I don't think talk radio hasn't, John. I mean, that's one thing that I would say. I think we're similar age. Has that changed in your view very much in the last 40 years?
I mean, I started working in talk radio 30 years ago. I'm probably 10 years older than you are. Mm-hmm. So I started working in sports talk radio in the early days. And yeah, it's changed. It's gotten edgier. It's gotten sillier. It's gotten more vacuous. Yeah. It's gotten less adherent to what I would call journalism, I think. Part of it is that what you mentioned, it's the entertainment factor. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of competition for your time and mine as a consumer. And if you need to talk about the Kardashians on your sports talk show, you do that if that helps you get a little bit bigger audience. I understand that. I do understand the business part of it in that sense. So yeah, it's changed. Yeah.
It's sillier for sure. I think it probably edgier. But to me, I'm just thinking back over the years what I listened to. Like Jim Rome. Jim Rome hasn't changed much.
No. You know? Still annoying as ever.
I know. Yes, annoying, but I've you know what though, John? I've said for 25 years he's annoying. I still listen to him.
Yeah. Well, I don't, because I think he's annoying, but
does have information.
Now. Right. No, that's the thing about it is it's not just the information, it's also the entertainment. Reception by the audience, and that's very subjective, and it always has been. You know, the difference between, I always try to tell my students, you've got to be journalist if you want to be a broadcaster. The difference is you have to perform that journalism. You know,
right.
And sometimes the performance is somebody's cup of tea and it's not somebody else's cup of tea. Now we know what Steve Sipple looks like. We know what he sounds like. We know about his family. We know that he likes to ride motorcycles. We know all that stuff. But 25 years ago, we didn't know that.
I have no idea.
Right?
Now we know that. No, it's just a byline.
Yeah.
It was just a byline. And quite honestly, I thought that was fine. I've always felt, John, there was sort of this romanticism about not knowing everything. But I've felt over the years, one of the drawbacks of the way our business has become is we know it's almost the romanticism has been stripped out. I hope you understand where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
I almost liked it better when there was one college football game or two on a Saturday, because it seemed like it was this massive deal and there's a lot you didn't know. And you didn't even know what the players looked like. Then they'd take off their helmets. You'd be like, oh, that's what Billy Sims looks like. Interesting. Now you just know everything about everybody. I mean, I think a lot of the romanticism has been stripped, and it's that to me is unfortunate. Now, some people would say, no, I like that. I like knowing everything about everybody. Yeah. I don't. I just assume not know.
Well, you're a big social media guy then, because that's how you learn everything, isn't it?
I really try to not. Like even on my show, I don't like to, there's a lot of guys who like to talk about themselves, and I just don't. I mean, I think John, we're pretty old school guys. I got in this to write and talk about other people the participants, the players in the game, the coaches, the people that are making the news. I don't know. It's sort of gravitated towards people want to know about us. I don't understand that.
Yeah, no. On that matter, and this requires absolutely no comment because I do have a couple more questions to ask you, but there's no better example in my world as I look at this of media representation or presentation than Skip Bayless. About 200,000 people watch his show every day, and 3.2 million people follow him on Twitter.
That's amazing.
And he follows nobody on Twitter. He follows zero. And so we know what his game is, and that's his game. But it seems crazy to me that we're all talking, some sports media critics are talking about Skip Bayless, who's going to be his new partner, Who cares? 339.8 million Americans don't care. Don't care enough to watch his show every day. Why do we care? Talk about somebody.
I'm not a huge fan of Skip, and I don't watch the show, but I will say this. I've watched it enough to know, I go back to this. He is a journalist.
He is, yeah. He's a little goofy.
He's become a little goofy.
He's always been goofy. He worked in the Bay Area, and he did radio on the station I worked at in San Francisco. He's always been a little.
But you got to admit, John, he brings information to the table.
No, yeah, but that's the irony of his existence. And I don't want to get too far off on Skip Bayless, but I did bring it up. That's the irony, I think, of his existence, is that he is a journalist, but he's on a program where they contrive conflict. Right?
That's what they do
for 2.5 hours. It's, no, the sky's not blue, it's red. Well, let me tell you for the next 12 minutes why it's red.
That's a good point.
So that's anyway.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Very quickly. I think you're one of the few people who actually got into Scott Frost's door and had some conversations with him. A guy, as you and I have talked about, who put a big old screen in front of him and kept it that way. How have you found the contrast of dealing with Matt Rhule after dealing with Scott Frost for 4.5 years?
Well, it's the early stages. They haven't played a game. Nebraska hasn't played a game with Rhule. But it's different. I don't want to go too far down the road because we just haven't had much time with Rhule. It wasn't like Scott was inaccessible. He was accessible. I guess accessibility wise, it's changed, I'd say, a little, but I don't know. It's just, John, so early to say.
Yeah. We haven't
covered a camp yet.
Yeah, and they haven't gone 0-2 yet after losing at Colorado, so we'll know after that what happens, he says facetiously. Very quickly then, just a general question about that then is...
I'm sorry, we have to...
Do you find that... how important is it that coaches respect what you do? Of course, they're not going to tell you everything. They're not going to tell you anything more than they want to tell you. But is it important they have respect for what you do?
I don't know that I've ever been asked that. I think it helps. Do they even know what we do? That's the thing that strikes me first. Do they even know who we are anymore?
I think so. I don't know Rhule at all. I don't know him at all, just what I look from the outside. But he sure looks to me like he's a much more savvy communicator than Frost was, and more savvy communicator in many respects than a lot of coaches.
Frost, I felt Frost, this is my, well, it's not just my opinion. I mean, I know him. I think he had a natural disdain for media. And I thought that showed a lot of the time, not all the time, but I think he has a disdain for it.
From day one, he showed that.
Yeah.
On his opening press conference, he showed that.
Right. And I, you know what? I always, you know, John, you do this. Again, we're old school guys. I try to put myself in the shoes of the people I deal with. And John, I'm kind of a curmudgeon. I'm not, when I think about like the Bo Pelinis and the Frosts, I wonder, I might be a little bit that way too. I think I would get very annoyed with the media if I was in their shoes. Some of the questions, some of the just sort of the inaccuracies that quickly become apparent. And then in a market like this, it would test your patience to a large degree. So, but Rule, I will say this, Rule is amazing in how he deals with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I think he's a professional in that respect.
I think he handles it. That's a good way to put it. He handles it much more professionally.
Yeah.
And he's very, I mean, he gives us information. That's what it comes down to for me. He's informative.
Yeah.
And I think he's transparent too at this point. Again, John, we'll see now. We'll see how this goes. I have done this quite a bit now, and I've seen coaches and how they change after a couple years here, and it gets hot and uncomfortable. We'll see how he is in a couple years.
Yeah, well, winning is the cure for most things, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah.
But not every, it's not.
No.
I like to say that, but Osborne had tough times here too, and he was always winning. You know? So,
yeah. That's what I heard, yeah.
I don't know. I just take it one day at a time with pretty much everything.
Well, there you go. Conversation to be continued. Thank you, Seth.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Find some time, John. Talk more about that Frost stuff. It's interesting.
Good. We're going to. We'll continue the conversation. Steve Sipple, columnist for Husker Online, the part of the On3 network, almost a year now after leaving more than 30 years at the Lincoln Journal Star. I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media.